The story behind the headlines. Every Sunday evening at this time, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Historical Association, presents Cesar Searchinger in his analysis of the news. In this analysis, Mr. Searchinger draws upon research material especially prepared for these broadcasts by eminent historians. And now, Cesar Searchinger.
Good evening, everybody. For the past 2 weeks, the people of this country have been entertained, thrilled, and sometimes disturbed by an all-star performance in the nation's capital. A parade of movie stars, movie writers, and directors of worldwide reputation have appeared in the role of humble witnesses before the Congressional Committee on Un-American Activities, headed by Representative J. Parnell Thomas of New Jersey, worthy successor to Martin L. Dyes. For one whole week, the so-called committee witnesses have spread rumor and hearsay accusations against Hollywood colleagues under cover of complete congressional immunity. They damaged reputations, tarnished the good names, impugned the morals of people who depend on these social assets for their living, to an extent not to be measured in dollars. For another week, so-called hostile witnesses have been grilled by examiners to discover their political complexions, party memberships, and personal associations, presumably in an attempt to uncover a sinister conspiracy to overthrow our form of government by subtle propaganda in our films. Nothing was actually proved, but several screenwriters accused of membership in the Communist Party firmly refused to answer to the crime of being communists and are therefore to be cited for contempt of Congress, a measure which may involve imprisonment in a federal jail. Now, no one has denied the right of Congress to investigate anything and everything, and even the right of certain congressmen to bathe in the reflected glamour and popularity of movie stars. But many eminent persons have questioned the motive behind these investigations and denounced the method of conducting them. Is it really within the power of Congress to assume judicial functions without providing the citizen with the judicial safeguards guaranteed him under due process of law? Is it within the power of a committee to compel or coerce a citizen publicly to reveal his political beliefs under a constitution which guarantees everyone freedom of conscience, opinion, and speech? The answer, it seems to me, has been given a few days ago in a most timely and important document entitled "To Secure These Rights," a phrase from the Declaration of Independence, which says, among other things, that a state of near hysteria now threatens to inhibit the freedom of genuine Democrats. This document is the report of the President's Committee on Civil Rights, a body of 15 prominent citizens, headed by Charles E. Wilson, president of the General Electric Company. It has worked on this question of civil rights for nearly a year to see what should be done about enlarging and securing them at this time. The answer is plenty. For while admitting the genuine advances that have been made in protecting civil rights, the committee shows how far short we have fallen in securing the safety of the person, the right to citizenship and its privileges, and the right of equality of opportunity. In this report, for $1 paid to the government printing office, you may read how many people are disfranchised, how many people are lynched and otherwise maltreated, how people are discriminated against on account of race, creed, and national origin, in education, in health services, in opportunities for jobs, etc. Facts and figures that will surprise you and shock you if you really care about our democracy. The committee makes some very interesting recommendations, both for legislation and for administrative reform. First, to strengthen our machinery for the protection of civil rights, both in the nation and the several states. We now rely almost entirely on an overworked FBI for the enforcement of our personal rights. Second, to strengthen the right to safety and security of the person, for instance, laws against police brutality, and to prevent such cruelties as our wartime evacuation of Japanese Americans from the coast. Third, to strengthen our citizenship rights, the right of all people to vote, irrespective of race, color, or national origin, including Negroes in the South, Indians in New Mexico and Arizona, and the unfortunate people, white or colored, who have to live in the District of Columbia. Fourth, to strengthen the right to freedom of conscience and expression. Now, for this, the committee has two specific remedies. One, it wants Congress to force all groups that aim to influence public opinion to come out into the open by registering who they are, what they profess to do, and where their money comes from. And two, it wants Congress and the government to clarify the loyalty obligations of federal employees, to establish standards and procedures that preserve the civil rights of these workers, in other words, to use a fair method or due process of determining a person's loyalty. This means the observation of proper rules of evidence, the right to representation by counsel, to subpoena witnesses and documents, and time and opportunity to appeal. These rules, mind you, are not observed either in the current congressional investigations of alleged un-Americanism or in the loyalty checks carried out by the government, in which an employee can be deprived of his livelihood without even knowing the nature of the charge or being given an opportunity to clear himself. And finally, the committee recommends measures to strengthen the right to equality of opportunity in our democracy, namely by the abolition of all segregation based on race, color, or creed, by prohibiting all forms of discrimination in private employment, in education, in housing covenants, in health services, and in public services generally, especially in the District of Columbia, where Congress controls all civic affairs. Now, this is a large order and a very important one. It requires, first of all, the cooperation of Congress, a cooperation for which recent history does not hold out much hope. For instance, the committee calls for the enactment of an anti-lynching law. Four such laws have been passed by the House, and three were killed in the Senate. A similar fate is likely to overtake the fourth. The committee also calls for the passage of a permanent Fair Employment Practices Act. Well, just such an act, sponsored by the administration, failed of passage in either House. Further, the committee wants Congress to tighten up laws directed against police brutality and related crimes, to enact new criminal statutes to prevent involuntary servitude, forced labor. It wants Congress to protect people, this means colored people, in their right to vote at all federal primaries and elections. It wants Congress to end all discrimination and segregation in the armed services, in all interstate transportation, in other words, federally outlawed Jim Crow, and in all publicly owned or supported institutions and places where the government has jurisdiction, as in the District of Columbia. More than that, the committee wants Congress to set up a joint standing committee on civil rights and cooperate in creating a civil rights division in the Department of Justice with regional offices in 8 cities and a civil rights division in the FBI. And finally, it recommends civil rights legislation on the part of the several states in matters where the federal government has no jurisdiction. Now, all this sounds pretty formidable, and there is little doubt that such a program will run into difficulties, not only with Congress, but with certain states. The whole complex of questions like states' rights, local autonomy, white supremacy, etc., is sure to be raised. In fact, not much is likely to be accomplished unless the people as a whole, you and me, get behind this historic effort for more human rights, for a greater realization of our heritage of democracy, for another great step on the road to freedom. That is why the committee concludes its remarkable report with a plea for a long-term campaign to educate the American people to a full knowledge of their civil rights and to enlist their full support. Of course, many people are very hazy in their minds about these liberties of ours. Most of them are satisfied to accept the notion that we have a free country and let it go at that. And a free country, to many, is a place where you can do as you like. That concept of America is a relic of pioneer days, an idea that inspired millions of immigrants to seek the freedom and opportunity they lacked in the land of their birth. Actually, however, democracy in this country, as elsewhere, is a thing of slow and sometimes painful growth. Independence from England did not automatically give us these personal rights that Jefferson declared to be natural and inalienable. They were fought for in the course of a revolution that took the double form of a war against England and a struggle against political and social inequalities within the colonies, even after they became states. The United States Constitution, as adopted by the Founding Fathers in 1787, said very little about personal rights. It was the states, or rather the people of the states, that forced the passage of the first 10 amendments, known as the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights specifically forbids the abridgment of certain rights by Congress and the federal government, of which the original 13 states were rather afraid. But the guardianship of these personal rights and liberties was left to the individual states. It was not until the Civil War that curbs were placed on state governments with the passage of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, which gave the Negro his freedom, his citizenship, and his right to vote. That was the culmination of the second period of struggle for the extension of our democracy, a kind of second revolution, with the Jacksonian Democrats and then the abolitionists carrying the torch. But even the 15th Amendment left the manner of voting and the question of eligibility largely to the states. As a result, many Negroes and poor whites have long been unable to vote and still are today. And there is as yet no adequate method to prevent other forms of discrimination, economic and social. There still is a wide gap between our democratic ideals and our performance. We learned that even an equitable franchise is not enough to secure the rights for all. For, as the report says, a democratic majority left unrestrained can be as ruthless and tyrannical as the absolute monarchs of old. So today we have reached yet another moment in our history when our civil rights need to be reviewed. Why particularly now? For one thing, our concept of liberty has broadened. It is no longer enough to have freedom of speech and opinion in the abstract. In a modern state, the problem is how they are to be used and made available to all. The right to freedom of conscience has received a new significance in this ideologically divided world, where men's political beliefs are often supposed to impair their loyalty to the state. Today, too, economic security has come to be as important as security of the person. In fact, it is more often in jeopardy. If discrimination goes unchecked, the livelihood of millions is placed in doubt. And here is another reason why we must act now. Now, as in every world crisis, the rights of individuals are invaded by the state. We had the Alien and Sedition Laws at the end of the 18th century, the Espionage Act during the First World War. We had what Jefferson called a federalist reign of terror against Democrats and Jacobins during the French Revolution. And we had the incredible Red Scare in the early years of the Russian Revolution, with its Palmer raids and its alien deportations. And today, we have an anti-communist hysteria that takes the form of witch hunts in government offices, labor unions, and even in Hollywood. But today, there is a new circumstance. In World War II, as never before, our own democracy was menaced. At any rate, Americans were aroused to the danger of fascism and Nazism and told how it could happen here. Today, our own democracy is, as it were, internationally on trial for the first time. It is threatened by an ideology claiming to be better, more democratic than ours, while ours is called a tyranny of the many by the wealthy few. But, whatever the merits of that argument, the basic principle of our kind of democracy is individual freedom, while Russian communism exalts the virtue of the state. The rights and the dignity of the individual citizen have always been sacred with us, and they must be re-emphasized and vindicated today. They must be made secure from attack, both from without and from within. The President's Committee has done a splendid service in reminding us of our danger and our opportunity. Good night.
You have just heard Cesar Sertinger with the story behind the headlines. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.